Good morning, Nashville. This is Morning Drive. Ryan Porth and Calvin Smith in for Brayton Gall and Derek Mason this Thursday morning. Big weekend of sports coming up. You've got the Titans and Texans. Titans win the game. They are in the playoffs for the second time in 3 years. You've got the college football playoff Saturday. You've got the Preds and Penguins doing a double dip Friday in Nashville, Saturday in Pittsburgh, before they head off to Dallas for the Winter Classic next Wednesday on New Year's Day.
Which we will both be at, Ryan.
We will, and that should be a ton of fun being down there at the Cotton Bowl.
Yes, absolutely.
In Dallas. But Titans, Texans, we've been talking about Derrick Henry a lot this morning already. And 615-737-1025, call or text us if you agree or disagree with Calvin Smith and his thinking.
My moral opposition to running the football.
Which is becoming a lot more modern, I guess you could say, when you value the running back position kind of like you do.
Meaning I don't.
Correct. And kind of the conundrum that the Titans find themselves in this offseason with Derrick Henry, as much of a star as he's been really since the start of December last season, you don't value Derrick Henry the same way a lot of Titans fans do. And I have here in this last, let's say, 12 months since he went wild on the Jags on that Thursday night game and has been really, really good since then. You don't value the bringing back Derrick Henry on a big contract this offseason, or maybe any sort of contract this offseason, because what Derrick Henry has been doing, someone else could do at a cheaper rate.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's kind of what you see across running backs across the league. Like we talked about this last segment, Austin Ekeler, Alvin Kamara, Aaron Jones. I mean, these guys who you can go find in other places. Now, that doesn't mean, like, when the Titans had Kalfani Muhammad on their roster, the undrafted rookie running back from Cal, I believe, that he could have been doing this. Mm-hmm. But it's about finding someone who's going to fit how you want to do it. And it's a product of the blocking in front of them in large part. And the Titans' blocking has gotten significantly better since Ryan Tannehill came in. Why? Because he hits the throws he needs to hit. He's been able to stretch the field to guys like Khalif Raymond, A.J. Brown, even Corey Davis has been involved a little bit.
Jonnu Smith.
Jonnu Smith, yes. Michael Pruitt on a couple instances. I mean, the crux of this has been the quarterback position. And I think, honestly, in this market at times, Ryan Tannehill goes underrated. I don't think on the national scale that's what's going on. But here in this city, like, Ryan Tannehill is the key, and we weren't even close to the trajectory with the Tennessee Titans.
Well, now defenses have to respect the quarterback that is playing under center for the Titans.
When a quarterback can distribute like Ryan Tannehill has been, there are so many different areas of the field they have to account for and different things they have to be looking to check into because of how Tannehill has been able to hit slants, throws to the outside, throws down the seam, throws to the edges across all sectors, dimensions of the field that really has changed. The makeup of this offense is completely different.
So I want to ask you a question before we go to the phones on Derrick Henry. Would you feel any different about bringing him back if he was multi-use? If he was someone like an Ekeler, someone like an Aaron Jones, someone like an Alvin Kamara, where you use them in the passing game a lot, where Derrick Henry hasn't caught more than three passes in a game in the last 2 years.
Well, and that's what's frustrating with Derrick Henry, because I think I'm not completely convinced that's not in his repertoire somewhere. But yes, to answer your question, I would at least give it a little bit more consideration. I mean, anything more than $3 million for a running back, to me, tough to justify. But if you can find someone like that at the right price, absolutely.
If you feel that way about Derrick Henry, how do you feel about Deion Lewis?
Deion Lewis is not the guy. Especially at the rate they're paying him.
I don't think Deion Lewis is on this roster in 2020.
He probably shouldn't be. With how he counts against the cap, for sure.
For sure. This is Morning Drive. Ryan Porth alongside Calvin Smith. 615-737-1025. Call or text us your thoughts about Derrick Henry. Let's go to Mike in Gallatin, who wants to weigh in on Derrick Henry. Mike, welcome in.
Hey, guys. So, Ryan, you kind of took what route I was headed. But there's so many other things that this Titans roster is going to have to do in the offseason that I'm just not seeing how we could pull out this many monster contracts. Other areas to think about that the Titans are going to have to address that I don't feel like we talk about as much, but replacing Delanie Walker, got to have a second tight end. If we're going to ride Jonnu as our main tight end, then we might have to either get a tight end one or a tight end two. Jack Coughlin, need a new tackle. along with, you know, shoring up still our secondary and other things. I just don't know if we can afford to give a huge contract to Logan Ryan, Derrick Henry, and Tannehill all at the same time. That's just, there's just not enough money to go around. Someone's got to have a franchise tag, and we're still got to stretch our budget around somewhere. But this Titans team's going to look way different next year, and that could be good or that could be bad. But Derrick Henry's been good for the team, but I'm kind of with you guys in the sense that if we can find a player that's not who we have right now, but a running back who can be multidimensional, that can still give us around what we're getting with Derrick Henry, I'm with you guys on that too.
Thanks, Mike, for the call. Hard to disagree with him with his thought of there's not enough money to go around to all the other free agents that you already have on your roster, not including other free agents that you might want to go out there in March and sign and boost the team.
Well, I think Mike brings up one of the best points that's not getting talked about a ton with this Titans team in the offseason, and that's what they have to do at right tackle. I mean, they have to maybe choose to pay Jack Conklin $10, $11, maybe $12 million, or maybe let Jack Conklin walk, move Dennis Kelly over, go into the draft and maybe start a rookie right tackle, look around free agency, because Lane Johnson just signed a market-setting deal with Philly. Jack Conklin has been a good right tackle for the Tennessee Titans, and that's something you really have to weigh and is going to affect the scope and the really what you want to do with your offense when you're thinking about a right tackle.
You have Tannehill. You have Henry, you have Logan Ryan, and you have Jack Conklin. How do you prioritize those four in terms of re-signing those four?
Tannehill first, for sure. You got to get something figured out there. Logan Ryan is a tough one for me because I like Logan Ryan as in his role in this defense, not only as a player, but as a leader.
Mm-hmm.
It's really tough. Could you read the names to me one more time?
Tannehill, Logan Ryan, Derrick Henry, Jack Conklin.
I would probably put Tannehill, Conklin, Ryan, Henry.
You would prioritize Jack Conklin over Logan Ryan?
Only because of the fact that Logan Ryan, it'll be his third contract in the NFL. And Logan Ryan will be getting to that age where you start to get a little bit more nervous. But I mean the margin between Ryan and Conklin is razor thin for me because I see and I know what Logan Ryan means to that locker room. And you know the kind of person Logan Ryan is in the community and for this organization. And personally, I believe you don't let that person get away from you.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like what they did with Delanie Walker.
Yes, and who Logan Ryan is not the kind of person that you really want to walk away because of how he leads your team and your secondary and your young players. And really, I mean, he even helped Tremaine Brock when he came in. Logan Ryan was a big help to him. So, you know, maybe I'm talking myself out of having Conklin at two there, and maybe I'm putting Logan Ryan above him right now because when I think about it, I couldn't justify not bringing back Logan Ryan because of the crucial role he plays as a leader of the defense and a leader of the locker room as a whole really would make it tough to not bring him back. It just depends on how much he gets because it's hard to give a long-term fat payday to a DB who's going to be entering the age Logan Ryan is, which I believe would be 29. I believe off the top of my head, it's not quite 30, I don't think, but once you hit that age in the NFL, you start to get a little bit more nervous, and you have to be thinking about it from that standpoint if you're John Robinson, which he is.
Logan Ryan is in his age 28 season.
So next year he will be 29.
In February, he turns 29.
There we go. And I think that's my hang-up with Logan Ryan is the age, and that's really it.
615-737-1025. Call or text us on Derrick Henry and this conversation that has now evolved into the offseason. Are you bringing back Derrick Henry? Are you letting him walk in free agency and letting another team sign him in free agency? Do you prioritize Logan Ryan or Jack Conklin or both over Derrick Henry? A lot on the table here on Morning Drive. Ryan Porth alongside Calvin Smith. If you miss any of the show, we have moved our on-demand audio to Apple Podcast and Spotify. Search Morning Drive in Apple Podcast or Spotify, or log on to thegamenashville.com to find our daily audio. And as always, rate, review, and subscribe.
5 stars only.
We will not accept any other stars but 5. We will not accept anything else other than your listenership. Coming up next on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth and Calvin Smith here with you on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brandon Gall and Derek Mason will be back tomorrow morning here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're discussing the Tennessee Titans and who we would prioritize in free agency of your own free agents for 2020. And the four names up for debate, Jack Conklin, Derrick Henry, Logan Ryan, and Ryan Tannehill. And Calvin, you say Ryan Tannehill by far number one.
No question about it.
Derrick Henry by far number four.
Yes, and then the two guys in between, I actually last segment flip-flopped. Like, I was in between on Conklin and Logan Ryan, and I eventually did I've changed my mind officially now. I'll go ahead and make it official because of who Logan Ryan is. And sometimes it's really with Logan Ryan, it has less to do with the player and more about the person and the leader Logan Ryan is. Granted, they can't pay too much for what he is. That's really the case with everybody, obviously, but there's a number I wouldn't cross with Logan Ryan, probably around $8
million. I would go Tannehill, Henry, Ryan, Conklin.
Really? I mean, obviously, I'm going to be the person to disagree on the value of Derrick Henry here based on how we've been talking and what we are learning about that position and how they can find someone to replace what that's been.
I understand 100% everything that you're saying, and it might just be, you know, tugging at the heartstrings for me as a Titans fan. Well, I love number 22.
That's what's difficult is also just how ingrained within all of our brains running the football is, and it's eidetic to football.
And it's been the Titans' identity for such a long time.
But the times have changed.
I know. No, I'm not disagreeing with that at all.
I'm curious what the callers think.
Let's go to Vic, who wants to weigh in on this Derrick Henry discussion here on Morning Drive ESPN 102.5 The Game. Vic, welcome in.
Happy New Year, gentlemen.
Happy New Year to you as well.
Happy New Year.
Visionary coaches, Bill Parcells, everybody was saying the Otis Anderson washed up. He gave him a shot. MVP of the Super Bowl. Al Davis, he saw Todd Christensen as a tight end. I'm going to increase your longevity. I know you can catch. I know you can block. So I'm thinking teams like Indianapolis, Houston, Baltimore, Kansas City, they're hoping you guys don't sign Derrick Henry. They're in the wings waiting. The coach from Seattle, if he can go with a three running back package, the one that got hurt, Marshawn Lynch, if he can talk him in for a low salary, and Derrick Henry, well, here we go again. I give you something to think about. You guys have a great day. I love your show. I'll call in later on.
Thanks, Vic, for the call.
Appreciate it, Vic. I'm going to disagree, and I don't think that obviously when Derrick Henry's breaking off a 70-yard run and he's making your linebackers look silly, you're not going to want to face that, and especially when it comes to tackling that man, you're not going to want to do that. But the instances where Derrick Henry is the main cog in beating you versus Ryan Tannehill is the guy beating you are pretty stark, and in most cases this season, it has come down to Tannehill making the throw when it matters or hitting on the 60-yard game ceiling pass.
I think we both agree Ryan Tannehill is by far the number one priority. I
Absolutely.
Mean, it's not even close. What he's done since he took over for Marcus Mariota after that Denver game, I mean, we are sitting here the day after Christmas talking about a win and you are in game in week 17 for the Tennessee Titans.
After that Broncos game, I never thought we would be on this planet.
I thought we would be talking about a top 10 pick in the draft.
We
and
were.
Whether or not they're going to draft Joe Burrow, Tua, Justin Herbert, or
Jordan Love.
Wait another year.
Jacob Eason.
Any of those quarterbacks, or wait another year and pass on the quarterbacks this year. I thought that would be the debate at this point in time after that Broncos game, which was one of the most atrocious performances yes. we have ever seen from the two-tone blue.
The only thing that we're asking about Ryan Tannehill now is how much will he regress next season? How far will his game drop off once you've seen how Arthur Smith is using him and how what he's going to be doing in this offense when he's not hitting on these improbable throws at such a consistent rate?
Well, the other thing with Tannehill in Miami is that not only was he average in Miami, he was hurt a lot.
Yes, and that has not resurfaced.
He has stayed healthy.
He's taken hits.
Yes, he has taken some big hits, including one in which he scored a touchdown and he leapt into the end zone. Forget which game that was.
It honestly looked like he was like 7 feet in the air, too.
Yes, I believe it was the Kansas City game. Maybe, I don't know. They're all running together at this point. Maybe the Jacksonville game.
I think it was Jacksonville.
Yes, because I was there and I was at the Jacksonville game. But what he's done, you don't really have any other choice but to bring him back and make him your starter for 2020.
And when they sign Ryan Tannehill, because I fully expect them to, don't be surprised when the number is $25 million a year, $26 million a year, $27 million a year, in that range, because that's, one, what quarterbacks command, and two, Ryan Tannehill has all the leverage in the world over this franchise.
Chris from Memphis on the text line, 615-737-1025. You can call or text us. Chris from Memphis on the text line saying, you have no choice but to bring back Derrick Henry, but not at a huge deal. I would say 3 years, $34 million. And I prioritize Logan Ryan over Jack Conklin.
I could not imagine a running back taking up $10 million on your cap. That's going to hurt you and your ability to go make moves you have to make when you need to sign positions that are crucial to your success.
Chris from Memphis also says Logan Ryan has played great except for the injuries around him. Draft a tackle within the first two rounds.
I do like that scenario. Bring back Logan Ryan and prioritize tackle in the draft.
You think a 2 or 3 year deal for Logan Ryan? Would he accept that? I mean,
what could Logan Ryan get
on the open market?
That's my big question with Logan Ryan. That's also a hang up is, you know, he's going to be looking for something that's going to make him secure because he's getting close to that age where retirement's probably within the next 6 years. He's got to have probably two contracts that are going to get him there. He needs to maximize the money he's going to make.
Maybe he signs a 4 year deal, but really there's no risk within the contract after 2 years.
Exactly. And that's how you can pull that off. And I would actually probably bet on that.
Let's go to Drew, who wants to weigh in on this Titans discussion. Drew, welcome into Morning Drive.
Good morning, fellas.
Good morning.
Good morning. Yes. To the one that's talking about devaluing Derrick Henry, you got to understand, from the caller that called before me, made a good point about the teams that will be slobbing at the mouth to get Henry into their camp. Now, you got to understand about the durability for Derrick Henry versus all these backs that's been going down. The one up there in Minnesota and the one in Washington, to say the least, even Todd Gurley, uh-huh, or even Elliott. All these backs that we're talking about don't have that durability as Derrick Henry has.
Derrick Henry's already hurt. He's got a hamstring injury.
Let me get to that. Okay. Now, how many times now have he been down in his almost 4 years in this franchise? Twice. The only time he has been down, and he was down during the time when Marco Henry was here. So actually, it's really one time since he had been a starter. Never had an injury in college. Never had an injury in high school. Now, as far as now, I mean, he is the most valuable player that the Titans have. Now, I will take Tannehill over him, but when that play action pass, it means a whole lot. You got to consider that too, to respect Henry in that backfield.
Thanks, Drew, for the call.
Yeah, so the point he makes about play action is actually something that's been studied a lot in the analytics community. And what's interesting is the success of running the football doesn't have much of an effect on play action. Obviously, the better you run the football, it will cause more of a bite from safeties and linebackers. But play action has proven to be successful whether or not you're running the ball well. I mean, Deion Lewis was not running the ball all that effectively last week against the Saints. But you know what still worked early on in the game, even when the run hadn't been, quote, established? Play action passing. It works generally in most scenarios pretty well, and that is not affected really strongly by running the football well or not. And in terms of, to hit on the point that they were making about Derrick Henry and other teams wanting to sign him, Floyd Reese brought up a really good point when we talked to him at 6:30 about Derrick Henry's most valuable place is right here in Nashville, because it's a square peg round hole kind of an issue where his skill set doesn't really fit a lot of modern offenses in the NFL. And that's a problem a lot of teams are going to have if they want to bring him in and sign him, or if he wants to make big money. One, Floyd also mentioned this, he's not a three-down back. And two, you haven't seen this kind of versatile value that you want to see from somebody you're going to bring in at the running back position.
Coming up next, we will continue this conversation. Plus, Bill O'Brien, do we think he's going to play the Texan starters on Sunday? We'll get to that as well. Calvin Smith, Ryan Porth here with you on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Live from the Wholesale Inc. studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. It is Morning Drive. Ryan Porth and Calvin Smith in for Braden and Derek this morning. They'll be back tomorrow morning. Marquise Munson behind the glass, spinning the tunes at a high level, as always. Marquise Munson's bump music game is always on point.
I just went in his ear on the talkback button and said, "You have the bumps."
Did you really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did. I mean, I got the best bumps in Nashville. What can I say, man?
And I completely agree with him on that.
I'm just saying, man. You got to have a niche, and that's mine.
There you go.
Bump music.
Munson, behind the glass. Munson, the producer, as you titled on Twitter.
It's an ode to Chance the Rapper. Since Chance is the rapper, I'm a producer.
Chance the Rapper and Munson, the producer. You're listening to Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're talking Titans this morning, and how do you prioritize the upcoming free agents for the Titans? We are using four names as the priorities of Jack Conklin, Derrick Henry, Logan Ryan, and Ryan Tannehill. Someone tweets in saying he would prioritize Tannehill, then Henry, then Conklin, then Logan Ryan.
Logan Ryan being on the bottom there really interests me, not only because Logan Ryan has been and is good, but Jack Conklin is kind of not the name I think that you would go to at number three.
James on Twitter says Logan Ryan, Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry, and he leaves off Jack Conklin.
Jack Conklin has been a good right tackle. I had him at two originally before I talked myself out of it with Logan Ryan at two.
I think he's been fine, but I'm not going to pay Jack Conklin top right tackle money.
No.
I pay Tannehill or even Derrick Henry. I know you're opposed to Derrick Henry. I think as a fan, I'm tugging at the heartstrings a little bit, not wanting to see number 22 leave mm-hmm. and go to a different team. He's been such a vital part of this, but I don't know.
I mean,
I would pay Logan Ryan whatever that number is before Jack Conklin getting the double digits in
million. One person tweeted in earlier, I think, or it might have been a text that we got in about drafting a right tackle. And my only hang up with that is, you know, I don't think that's a bad strategy, but could you imagine the right side of this line next season with Nate Davis at right guard and a rookie right tackle? That's a big risk you're running, and that's why I think Jack Conklin would have a lot of value because he's played.
Well, it's good to have Dennis Kelly as
that's very true
as your backup plan at right tackle.
Which
I'll say that
he would be very serviceable at least.
Let's go to Jeff, who wants to weigh in on Derrick Henry and the Titans and all this discussion. Jeff, welcome into Morning Drive.
Morning, gentlemen. Hope you boys had a Merry Christmas.
Thanks, you too.
Thanks, you too.
Oh, yeah, I got enough socks to get me through 2020.
Ah, there you go.
I'm gonna make my third and fourth priority Henry and Conklin. And as a Titans fan, I would love for us to get a good deal for Henry and sign him to a multi-year deal, but I don't think that'll happen. But I think we franchise tag Henry and we let Conklin walk and we give Dennis Kelly a multi-year contract to stay in Nashville.
Yeah, hey, Jeff, I have a question for you, actually. What do you define as a good value for Derrick Henry as a fan?
So, I mean, if we're okay with, guys like Cameron Wake making $10 million a year and Deion Lewis making $4 million a year, I'd be totally fine with Henry getting $8 to $10 million a year. But I'm nervous that, you know, what's the shelf life going to be? Are we going to get one, maybe two good years out of him? Are we going to get one good year out of him and then the rest is going to be a fall off in production? I mean, it's so hard to judge on what you're going to get in terms of good value.
Thanks for the call, Jeff.
Yeah, okay, so I had to ask that because I don't really know where the fans are at on Derrick Henry and what kind of value they mean by that. Is $6 million of value? Is $12 million of value based on what you think of him? And for me, I mean, I would struggle to get north of $8 million or really, personally, anywhere above $3 million for a running back, but in that range, it's just a good bit of your cap that's going to be taken up by a position that is likely replaceable.
If it was 3 years, $24 million.
Still tough.
For
most people, that's a deal and they're going to take it. But for me and my extreme far right, far left, far up, far down opinion of running the football and the replaceability of running backs, I would struggle to get there.
What's difficult to know is how the rest of the NFL values Derrick Henry and what he could make on the open market.
And I don't think,
even if he's just a one-trick pony and isn't a big threat out of the backfield, at least in the passing game.
I don't think the NFL as a whole, would value him like the Titans would. And, I mean, we heard Floyd Reese make that point earlier on in the show, that the place where he is most valuable in terms of a production and money standpoint is right here in Nashville because of how they run their offense, in large part because how he's been good at it.
All it takes is one team.
It only takes one.
It only takes one team to say Derrick Henry is our missing piece, and then all of a sudden he's breaking the bank with that team and not here.
And that's the great part about open markets.
And maybe the Titans are the team that says he's the missing piece.
And he's not even missing from this team right
exactly,
now.
But you know what I mean. Yes. Let's go to AG, who wants to weigh in. AG, welcome into Morning Drive.
Yeah, I love Derrick Henry, and I like Ryan Logan. But, I mean, if I'm a GM, I got to show up my offensive line and my defensive line. Man, I can't compromise my team. I mean, I love Logan Ryan, like I said. But the defensive line, offensive line, I got to put some money into that.
So are you saying Jack Conklin needs to be re-signed?
Jack Conklin, it depends on what's out there. I mean, I haven't heard him losing a lot of battles like Taylor Lewan been losing, so I guess he's been doing a decent job if we haven't been hearing his name.
Fair point, AJ. Thanks for the call.
That's one of the better points we've had.
But if you're paying Lewan top left tackle money, can you afford to pay Conklin top right tackle money and also have Roger Saffold making all that money on the left side of that line?
And you just re-signed Ben Jones. But at the same time, I really look at the structure of this line and what can they sustain losing on that right side, because that's been a real sore for them at times, in part because of the turnstile that was at right guard to start the year. Ben Jones getting up there in age a little bit, even though they did re-sign him, and I'm confident in him being able to be stable at the center position. But you would be running a risk by not bringing him back. Just he would command $10, $11, $12 million top end right tackle money. I think Lane Johnson just got between $14 and $15 million. So it just depends on how you view the difference between Conklin and Lane Johnson.
Steven on Twitter says he would prioritize Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry, and saying, I see both as a must. And then Logan Ryan is a nice to have, and I would like Conklin back, but you cannot overpay him.
I think so. What he said about Conklin, I would apply to both Logan Ryan and Jack Conklin. Ryan Tannehill, I don't view as a must. I don't view either of them as a, quote, must, because it depends on what direction they're going in organizationally. I mean, if you're John Robinson, if you think the quarterback is out there that's going to change your franchise, if you think Jordan Love, Jacob Eason, you know, probably not Jake Fromm, but Jake Fromm, something like that, then they're going to go take that guy, as they should, well, if they think he's the one.
Okay, you can take that guy, but why don't you also bring back Ryan Tannehill and let that first or second round pick at quarterback learn under Tannehill and not be thrown into the fire?
Well, given the position they'll be drafting in, that's probably what they'll have to do, because Jacob Eason, Jordan Love, both of those guys are considered projects, and where they're picking in the draft, they're not going to be able to go get somebody who is a plug-and-play starter. I'm not really sure anybody's truly sold on any of these quarterbacks this year, which works out perfectly for the Titans that Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields come out next year.
Well, I think either way you have to get a dependable backup quarterback for Ryan Tannehill because of the injury history he had in Miami, and for the same reason why you went out and got Tannehill, because of Marcus Mariota's injury history and also mediocre play.
The Titans might be stuck on the carousel of mediocrity right now. And the mediocrity may not be the right word there, because they're good. They might be stuck on the turnstile, the carousel of just being good and not being able to get too great because of the position they're in, where they're not going to have a high enough pick. The NFL has the salary cap, so they're not going to be able to go spend uber dollars on free agents like they're the Los Angeles Angels or the New York Yankees or the Golden State Warriors or what have you. They just might be stuck in this position where tanking may have to happen at some point to change the franchise for someone like a Trevor Lawrence. Now, that's not going to happen next year. They're not going to do that, but they may be stuck in a little bit of neutral.
Do you think, shifting our sights from the offseason to this week, because this week is of the utmost importance for this Titans team, you have to win this game to make it to the playoffs.
Absolutely.
That's how you have to approach it. You can't approach it saying, oh, well, if we lose, we can still get help and get in. You control your own destiny, go down to Houston and win that game against a Texans team that doesn't have as much to play for. And in thinking that, Calvin, if you're Bill O'Brien, are you playing any of your top starters Sunday afternoon?
If I'm Bill O'Brien?
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
Do you think Bill O'Brien would?
I think Bill O'Brien would. I think Bill O'Brien is that kind of guy that, one, wants to stick it to a division rival, and two, is just kind of a jerk in a way. And Bill O'Brien would want to just go knock somebody out and make sure they don't get into the playoffs, especially a team who, you know, he's kind of beat a good bit since he's been in this division. Bill O'Brien is that kind of coach that I think also would take into account the fact that we've still got things we need to figure out on our team here, so we have to go play this game to win. I could see that happening. And also, you know, them carrying over and still maybe not losing momentum, even though I don't subscribe to that particular belief either.
If you think back to what he did, let's say in 2016, 3 years ago, the Texans clinched the division after the Titans lost that Christmas Eve game against Jacksonville, and then they won, I believe, later that evening to clinch it. In Week 17 at Tennessee, they were 9-6. They had their fate sealed. They were in the playoffs. They won the division, and they still trotted out Brock Osweiler. They still trotted out DeAndre Hopkins, their number one quarterback and their number one receiver. They had nothing to play for. They will likely have nothing to play for by 3:25 Sunday afternoon.
I'm taking Bill O'Brien at his word that they're going to go into this game and, one, be playing to win, and, two, have most of their players out there, even though DeAndre Hopkins is listed on their injury report as a DNP, did not participate in their last practice because he was sick.
Starters played last year, too.
I mean,
in Week 17.
I'm trusting Bill O'Brien that he's going to go do his thing and keep his guys out there. I mean, they still have problems to figure out that they might want to get solved before they get to the playoffs. They haven't been a lock team at all this season. They're the weakest division winner in the AFC.
I don't know if I would go that far.
In the AFC, they're the weakest division winner?
I think the Patriots are...
Whoa!
I'm not buying what the Patriots
Ryan
are selling.
Ryan Porth at 7:43 in the morning. Wow!
I'm not buying the Patriots at all. The Texans beat the Patriots. And this Patriots team, I'm sorry, they offensively,
they're anemic.
They aren't very good. Defensively, they've been really good, but they've been really good against bad teams. The Patriots have been.
It's hard to bet against the Patriots come the end of the season. And this is what they do. And they have this classic history of losing to teams in the regular season, like the Texans, and then turning around. And if they play them in the playoffs, they beat them to a pulp.
And the same could happen. But if you look at the three Patriots losses this season, they've lost to the Ravens, they've lost to the Texans, and they've lost to the Chiefs. They have lost to all three division teams, or all three of the other division winners. I'm not buying the Patriots.
How? Maybe we're all playing checkers and Bill Belichick is playing 3D chess and he lost those games on purpose. That didn't happen, of course, but that would... That's just too Patriot, too Belichickian, too Tom Brady for them to not have something up.
Coming up next is Roman Josi proving that he was worth the contract that he received back in October, and I think the answer is simple. We will get to that coming up next. ESPN 102.5 The Game is bringing you the road to Dallas, Nashville's best coverage of the Winter Classic. Keep up with all you need to know about the Winter Classic as the Preds face the Stars in Dallas on New Year's Day. Special programming and live coverage from Dallas all month long and really over this entire next week. Hit up thegamenashville.com for full programming information. We'll talk Preds coming up next. He's Calvin Smith. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into the show. Ryan Porth alongside Calvin Smith here with you on this Thursday morning. And for Braden Gall and Derek Mason, they will both be back tomorrow morning breaking down all things Titans, college football playoff, and Nashville Predators. And speaking of the Nashville Predators, Monday night, they beat the Arizona Coyotes 3-2. A really fun game, intense game there in the third period as they held on to beat a really good Arizona Coyotes team to win their fourth game in their last five outings. And they have now collected nine of a possible 10 points in their last five games. And this Nashville Predators team, I don't know whether they've turned a corner or not, but what I will say is that Roman Josi is proving that he is worth that contract that he signed. 8 years, $72+ million back in October, the big contract that he got. He is absolutely proving his worth right now. He has scored in all five games. 7 goals total and 9 points total in these last 5 games. He is playing out of his mind right now.
When you talk about players who sign big contracts, first of all, I always get nervous when we talk about a 29-year-old player getting an 8-year contract. That makes me nervous no matter what. But when you sign a deal like that, you come under an intense microscope. Everybody's looking at you. The media, I mean, even your own teammates are going to say, this is the big money guy right here. And obviously everybody knew Roman Josi was already a leader on this team, a captain and all of that. But getting that kind of money to come behind it changes the game a little bit. And you're going to be fully cognizant of this as a player. It's not something that you're just going to be like, you know, it's whatever. No, like you know you got this money. And you see a lot of times players come out, and due to the microscope, whether they are playing at the same level or not, it changes our perception of what they're doing. And it's so fun to see someone come up, maybe even rise to the occasion, or it just happens to be luck falling when he's playing well right now, that he's playing his best hockey that he needs to be playing when it seems to matter more. Every game means the same, all of that. But when you get that kind of a contract, it changes the game for you, and he's putting on a show to prove he's worth it.
Well, and it could not have come at a better time, because this team, I would say, was in a bad way after that Dallas game. The Dallas game on December 14th, they lose 4-1 at home, and they looked awful after the Stars scored their first goal. It was nothing like any Predators teams that we've seen here in the last few years. I say that with a caveat of we did see that kind of version of the Preds too often last regular season where they looked like a shell of themselves. That came back on that Saturday late afternoon game against the Stars, and you're thinking, where is this team going? I mean, that was their second straight loss. They were treading water at that point, but now that they've won 4 or 5, maybe they've turned a corner, and if they have, I think you can credit Roman Josi big time for turning this around, and him as the captain and the lead dog on that blue line, putting the team on his back and saying, I am turning this season around myself if I have to.
Well, that's kudos to David Poile, because the kind of players you go pay big money to are the ones who can put the team on their back and say, hey, I'm the guy now, we're struggling, and it's time for me to go do what I'm supposed to do, be a captain, be the big money player, and be a factor, maybe the largest factor, in turning around what was looking really negative for the Predators. And now how they sustain that is a different question, because Roman Josi cannot drive this team for the rest of the season, but he can be the catalyst in turning it around right now.
Well, the important thing for this Preds team is to keep the foot on the gas. And I know they know that. They say that in the media, and they've been saying that for the last week, is that what we're doing still isn't good enough. We still need to keep the pedal to the metal. And they really do, because, yes, they do have games in hand. They're still on the outside looking in when it comes to the playoff picture.
Yes.
And you can't afford to say, okay, well, we good. We
they cannot.
We've won 4 of 5. We're good. And we can take the foot off the gas. They truly need to make this a stretch where they win like 12 out of 15. And I think once they do that, then they have truly turned a corner and got the season back on track.
Keeping their foot on the gas is not like an isolated issue. I mean, this is something we've talked about the last few years with this the Peter Laviolette Predators teams, is that at times it seems like they just kind of take it off, or take a playoff, take a game off, take a week off, and you wonder, where is this team's consistency and their ability to keep pushing it down and, for lack of a better way to put this, like stomp on somebody?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, think of the Ottawa game in the middle of this 5-game stretch that we're talking about, that they've kind of righted the ship, at least for now. They admitted after that game that they relaxed in the second period against Ottawa, and they lost that game in overtime. They easily, I mean, Ottawa is a bad team. They should have won that game.
Yes.
But they relaxed in the second period, and they were forced to come back from a 4-1 deficit in the third period. They did get a point out of it, so they are 4-0-1 in their last 5 and not 4-1-0. But your point is well taken of it happens way too often.
It has
way
been.
More than what you would expect to see out of this Preds team that is so good up and down the roster.
Well, it's weird that you get them admitting they relax, and then them also saying we got to keep our foot on the gas, because that's two kind of like counterintuitive things that don't work together, and it just makes you wonder which one they believe more. Right?
As in, like, in the locker room?
Yeah, because obviously they come out and say they gotta work hard. You know, they gotta play every play hard. We gotta keep the hammer down. You know, whatever, all of that stuff.
What every team and every player says on every team.
But that has not been bared out in their results over the course of the last few seasons, and you gotta wonder if they organizationally believe that.
I would say, since last regular season, I mean the season before you win the President's Trophy, mm-hmm. they had the foot on the gas that entire regular season.
Yeah.
And in the playoffs, whatever the case, I mean, you lose 7 games against Winnipeg.
Yep.
I mean, those were the 2 best teams in the National Hockey League. It sucked, but that at that point in time, really, since the start of from the start of the 2017 postseason through the end of the 2018 postseason, I don't think you can say they took their foot off the gas. Now, last regular season, They start 13-3. Their foot's not off the gas at that point. They go through a long stretch of being riddled by injuries. When Victor Arvidsson was out, Philip Forsberg was out, PK Subban was out. And they were without like 6 players on a East Coast road trip right before Christmas last year. I mean, they were just devastated with injury. It was really the calendar year of 2019. Once they started getting healthy and they were still inconsistent, they were still losing games by a wide margin against teams that they probably shouldn't have been losing those games to, or other top teams, and they just came in and completely annihilated you.
So what changed to start 2019? What changed to start this year as we're about to leave it? And is it going to reverse?
I honestly don't know. That's been a huge mystery with this team of why this happens, where they'll have a good stretch or a good game, and then they'll turn around 2 nights later and look like a completely different team. They beat Washington last January like a drum, 7-2, defending champs. 2 nights later, Winnipeg comes in here and beats the Preds 5-1. And you're thinking, which Preds team do we really believe here? Do we believe the team that beat Washington, or do we believe the team that got beat like a drum by Winnipeg? I think the answer was somewhere in between. But it was just so Jekyll and Hyde last regular season, and we've seen a little bit of that already this regular season.
That's a lot of that blame gets deflected to Peter Laviolette a lot of the times. How much do you buy that? Because I really see the point in that teams take on, obviously, the mantra of their coach, and that's part of it. But at the same time, I don't see Peter Laviolette as that kind of a coach, as that kind of a player, a coach, person, leader.
I think it's on everybody, if I'm being completely honest. That up and down is on the coaching staff. It's on the players. I mean, these players have been playing together for a long time.
They have.
And they have seen a pretty good amount of success, more success than any other Preds core than we've ever seen. But at the end of the day, I mean, those star players like Ryan Johansson, Ryan Ellis, Roman Josi, Philip Forsberg, Victor Arvidsson, those are the guys, Pecorine, that have to go out and play at a high level every single night for this team to be consistent.
Well, and the nature of players like Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, streaky. Like, at times, they look like top players in the league at their position, and sometimes they'll disappear for stretches, and it's mm-hmm. kind of like, whoa, what happened to them?
Right.
Are they fully healthy kind of things?
Well, these last 5 games, at least for Roman Josi, have been spectacular.
I mean, Roman Josi, I would not say is streaky.
He's been very consistent. He is the team's MVP.
Oh,
at this point in the season.
Down.
I think some people would say Nick Bonino would be in that conversation.
Still leading the team in goals, right?
I would have to double-check that.
Like,
I think Forsberg took it over
okay.
Monday night with
okay.
his goal.
There we go. It was as of last week.
I would have to double-check that.
We can check it during the break.
We'll check it during the break. But coming up next, Joe Rexrode of The Athletic will be joining us here on Morning Drive. Ryan Porth and Calvin Smith here with you on ESPN 102.5 The Game.